Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And also, we are very happy to have back here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Monthly on the show here, we have her on the program, and we open up the phone lines to answer questions. That's really the idea. If you have a problem and you're not really quite sure what to do about it, you know, call in and tell us. Maybe people are still thinking about things they might like to be planting. We can take questions about grass, trees, shrubs, vegetables, flowers, houseplants, any and all that kind of stuff that grows in the home landscape. You give us a call, and Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much.
Good morning.
We're just sitting here, Sandy and I was just talking that it's been pretty, weather-wise, it's been pretty nice summer, unless, of course, you like hot, steamy weather, which I don't.
And then they can move.
Go someplace else. And things, I'd say, you know, looking around my neighborhood and my yard, everything seems pretty pretty happy. The only thing is that occasionally we get these torrential downpours, and sometimes stuff looks a little, the tall, thin things, they get kind of beat up. But, you know, basically, everything seems to be looking pretty good.
Yeah, it really is, especially a lot of the perennials and a lot of the plants that normally are looking pretty sad this time of year are actually looking pretty good. We are noticing some things that, you know, when we get this kind of, this consistently moist weather, it's perfect conditions for fungal diseases. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing an awful lot of fungal diseases, especially people may notice, especially on their crab apple, maybe apple scab is a fungal disease that we often get because we get cool wet springs, but that's extended cool period. It seems like the trees from apple scab actually lost their leaves early. You know, normally they wouldn't drop their leaves until July or August. We were actually seeing them starting to drop the 1st of July, and so people may notice that their crab apples look pretty bare right now. And the good news is that isn't life-threatening for the most part. It just, you know, doesn't look all that great.
Yeah, I have a spot in my yard. I had two dwarf cranberry bushes, and a really nice little plant. But one of them, over the past few years, piece by piece, it died.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that was remaining for a while wasn't looking so good. And then now this year, up until just recently, it was really looking good. And I thought, well, okay, whatever was affecting both of those plants. But now one section of that is all wilted. Mm-hmm. And I have never been exactly quite sure what that was about, although I suspected that it was some kind of fungal wilt kind of thing,
right,
that it was
right.
That and not some insect. Whatever it is, that's the only plant that it seems to affect.
Yeah, it's probably cranberry bush viburnum, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably what it is. And unfortunately, sometimes they will get some fungal wilt type diseases that are actually systemic through the plant, or root rot problems and some of those kinds of things. Unfortunately, they might do okay until we get really hot weather, and then people notice they kind of crash at that point.
Yeah, so it's up until this point, it had been looking really good, and I thought, well, hopefully it would be okay. But now, so I don't know.
It's a shopping opportunity, I figure.
I guess. Well, the lines are full, so let's start talking with some folks. We will start out, in fact, with we'll take them right in order. So we'll start with line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have actually a couple questions, most of probably which deal with this wet weather. First of all, my squash looks like it's got fungus. It's got white powdery fungus on the leaves, and I was wondering if there's anything I can do about that organically.
Yeah, organically is another point. Now, a lot of the problem is depends on how far along it is. Does it seem like it's just starting, which would surprise me a little bit, but does it seem like it's just getting going?
It's been several weeks, and it's mostly on the lower leaves.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, on those guys, there are some things you can do. I'm not sure. I'm just looking here if there are some fungicides you can use if they're not too far along. The problem being, I'm not sure. I was trying to see if there was actually anything that was more of a something that you could actually use as a organic. And I'm just looking here, so we'll have to. And I'll just continue to look here. Did you have another question about?
Yeah. Continuing on the squash, actually the fungus may be the least of our problems since I found little gray bugs with flat backs about 1 centimeter, almost 1 centimeter, more narrow on the front than on the back, and they've got sucking, biting, technically bugs.
Yeah. Amazingly enough, those are called squash bugs.
Yeah, I figured they were.
That's not very imaginative.
It's not particularly imaginative. But hey, you know, it kind of fits.
Are these the ones that actually kill the plant?
They actually can really stress it at the point where, yes, where you pretty much don't get anything.
Okay.
And actually, between the two things, you can pretty well, you're going to have some problems. Are you starting to get squash? I don't know. Is this a summer squash, winter squash?
They're both yellow straight necks.
Okay. So it would be one of those things. Unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of controls for squash bugs.
Okay.
And also, the funny thing is, one of the best controls for squash bug is to actually squish them.
That's what I've been doing, but I'm not out there often enough.
Yeah. And sometimes you get lucky. Now, you may be farther along here to the point where you don't really have that opportunity, but they actually have, you know, they lay eggs in groups.
Okay.
And they're kind of brownish.
Ah.
And if you flip on the undersides of the leaves, you can see the eggs. And so if you can get them before they actually come out, That's right. And if you're just in the beginning stages of this, you might be lucky enough that you can do that.
Yeah, on cursory glance, I found maybe a half dozen bugs. What I'm worried about is that they'll spread to the other squash plants.
Yeah, right.
The winter squash plants are doing better as far as fungus, and I haven't seen any evidence of the squash beetles over there.
But. Right. Yes. So that would be one of those things that I would really be a little bit, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of things. There are some insecticides that you can use, but they're not organic.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not sure how happy you're going to be with any of the other stuff. I will tell you, I was just trying to figure out, now, if you have powdery mildew on those, sulfur is labeled for that.
Okay.
Which usually that's considered. Now, if it's powdery mildew, then that's what it would be. If it's... and I'm guessing that's probably what it is. So
right.
Sulfur is listed for that. I just want to check and make sure.
Like classic powdery mildew.
Yeah, okay. So sulfur is listed for that. So you could absolutely use that if you wanted
to. And if I remember right, watering early in the morning and staying off the leaves might also help that a little.
Yeah, the problem is this time of year is it's the leaves are always wet. But it's hard to get them to dry out. But with any of the fungal diseases, if we can let them dry out, that's the best thing. So you definitely don't
out there with my blow dryer.
Yeah, there you go. See, I like this woman. She needs to hang out with me. No kidding. So the big thing is for people not to water in the evening because we don't want to make it worse.
Right.
So that's probably the one thing.
One thought I had, depending on how far gone the squash plant is, maybe just to pull it up entirely, this one that's doing particularly bad, and start over.
And that might be the best thing. Both of these things, squash bugs as well as the powdery mildew, is going to travel to your other squash.
Right.
Absolutely. And cucumbers and any of the other stuff that.
Cucumbers are close by.
Yeah, so you may decide you just want to get it. And I definitely do it when the foliage is dry, hopefully, and then pull the stuff out. And that might be your best bet is just to get rid of the stuff altogether.
A lot of the lower foliage has gone brown and dry.
Yeah, which is typical of powdery mildew.
Okay. And would it still be reasonable to start squash from seed and still get a decent harvest? Would you recommend something else?
I'd probably look at something else because the problem is they're not very frost tolerant, the plants are. So you'd have a pretty – unless you could come up with, you know, some of the – I'd have to look at the days to harvest on those. It'd be really close. But some of the, like the zucchinis, the little round ones, and some of them that are really smaller, you might be able to – you know, if we don't have an early frost, you might be able to push it out. But I think you'd probably end up having a frost before you get any.
Okay, is there something
harvest
on the top of your head of any kind of vegetable that might
that would tolerate frost and stuff?
Well, that would come that I could start from seed now and
Any of the leafy things.
Okay.
And actually this is a good time to do spinach and lettuce and any of the leafy stuff. If you're lucky enough to find broccoli transplants or cauliflower transplants, you could certainly do those, but you'd want to do those from transplants. But certainly all the leafy stuff, Swiss chard, all that kind of stuff you could still do from seed.
Yeah,
sure.
Got all kinds of seeds.
Sure. There you go.
Okay. I thought I had another question, but I can't seem to find it.
Well, you can always call your local extension office.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care, and we have a number of callers here, and now we'll have one free line. So if you want to call in, 333-9455, that's the number, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller up is in Penfield. This is line two. Hello?
Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
Thank you for all your work.
Oh, thanks.
I really appreciate the program. I am going to be moving some plants around.
Oops.
You're kind of breaking up on us.
Oh, all right. Is that better?
We have you back right now, so go ahead, yeah.
Okay. I want to know what the best time is to move phlox or give it away and sort of take it over the garden. Yeah. And also what the best time is to move Asian lilies.
Okay. You know, it's one of those things, probably both of those, I think I would probably say, especially the Asian lilies, I'd probably look more at springtime. You could do it like 1st of September is the other time we often think about moving perennials. And the phlox, I think you'd be fine around the 1st of September. So if people are able to water them and we don't get in to a point where we're having regular rains, if they're able to water them, then they should be fine. I think the biggest problem is waiting too late in the fall. So usually around the first couple of weeks of September, usually people are fine.
Okay, very good.
Sure.
All right, very good. And we'll go next to our line number three. Here's a caller. Hello.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. One has to do with our clematis. We have two very lovely clematises, which we've had for years and years, and each year they seem to be doing worse. They come out, they bloom in full. One of them has these sort of double flowers on them, and that dies just while the flowers are blooming and the mm-hmm. other buds on them, and it just dies back.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens in the spring, and we see nothing of this for the rest of the season. And the other one has managed to survive much better. It's magnificent when it's in full bloom. It usually dies back and then comes back, and this year it's just turned, the leaves have turned black, and it's looking dreadful. So we don't know whether we're overwatering or underwatering. One faces, it's on a wall that faces north, but it's pretty well protected. And that's the one that's done extremely well, and then this year is looking dreadful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The other one is facing, it's on a south wall, it's on the garage, and it faces the south, and that just does terribly.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd have a couple thoughts on that. The south, I assume it's getting some pretty hot sun at one time or another, the one that's on the south exposure.
Yes, and it's under the eave of the garage, and so it doesn't get a lot of water, but we do try to keep it watered and keep its feet in the shade by planting things around it.
Right, right. It may be one of those things that they actually do a little bit better if they're in a cooler environment than maybe on the south side. So that one you might think about moving it. I think sometimes the east side or someplace where it doesn't really get that really hot sun, I think they do a little bit better. Even if you're watering, I think just the hot soil and all that kind of stuff, I think is still an issue for those guys. I think the other thing that we're seeing, especially this year, again, and we were talking about fungal diseases, is clematis do get a fungal disease. There's a clematis wilt that there's some debate on whether it actually is an infectious disease or not. But at any rate, it's common with clematis or clematis to get this disease. And it usually happens. They look great in the spring. Kind of sounds like what you're talking about. They look great in the spring. And then about the time it starts to get hot, then they just collapse and they turn brown. And usually they grow back out of it. It doesn't kill them, but it kills off the existing vines. So it kind of sounds like that. The problem is we really don't have much in the way of any kind of controls. There are some supposedly resistant varieties or ones that have been labeled or have been listed as more resistant to clematis wilt. And actually, the Chicago Botanic Garden did a really nice evaluation on clematis. And on their website, the Chicago Botanic Garden, you can find their evaluations on, and they'll list which ones that tend to get clematis wilt and those that tend not to. This year was just a tough year, and I think they all tended to get it, even if they tended to be resistant. So you might think about a replacement if it just seems like this is happening every single year. And we do recommend that you actually plant them deeper than what they are in the pot. You actually want a couple of the buds underneath the ground, and that way they have a better tendency to come back.
So for the one that really is performing badly for the first time, I mean, not for the first time, but really badly this year, and which is normally so good, is there anything I can do to it now to revive? I've cut back all the blackened leaves and so on, and it's just looking, still just doing nothing. So do we just leave it there? I mean, other than replacing it, just leave it there? hope it comes back.
Yeah, I think that's probably your best bet, and it probably will. From what my experience has been, it's not life threatening. It doesn't kill them, but it sure makes them look bad, and those existing vines don't look all that great. So I would definitely, I think on that one, it was a tough year, and it may have been just even though maybe it had some resistance in the past, it didn't this year because it was just a tough year for fungal diseases. So that one you might want to, you know, hang on to, and just, you know, obviously if we get into a drought period, you probably want to water it and those kind of things. The other one I might think about either replacing it or moving it or something along those lines. I think probably maybe a little bit better location for that particular one might be better.
Okay, and then a quick question on the hydrangea. Again, we started out, it was in the right location, we thought, and it bloomed as a pink hydrangea. And then every year it's produced fewer and fewer blooms, and this year it's very healthy looking, but it has not a single bloom on it.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know what variety it is or what cultivar it is, what the name was?
No. Okay. Is there?
Yeah. The problem with the pink and blue ones, those ones that turn colors like that, is that there are actually some of them actually bloom on old wood, the wood from the year before. And we had a particularly cold winter, and so a lot of the hydrangeas lost that old wood, and then they don't flower very well, or they flower poorly, because they don't have that old wood to bloom on. Now, some of the newer varieties of the pink and blue ones, like Into Summer and Summer Beauty, and some of those actually bloom on old wood and new wood both. And then that way, even if you lose the old stems, you still get flowers.
So I shouldn't cut them back. I think I may have cut back all the old canes.
I would not on the pink and blue ones. Unless you know for sure that it blooms on new wood. A lot of them will either bloom on both, or they'll bloom on just the old wood.
I see.
So that would be one I would either, you know, sometimes it's tough to figure out when to prune them. Obviously, the branches are dead in the spring. You go ahead and prune them off if they're dead. But I would definitely, you know, sort of wait on those. You can certainly do some shaping and stuff, you know, after they flower, those kind of things. But so watch, yeah, I would watch definitely when you prune them.
Okay.
But they like a lot of moisture. You know, they're one of those that need to be fertilized. They like to be fertilized, those kind of things, for them to really get going.
Okay, thank you very much.
Very good. And next caller that we have is someone in Piatt County. Line number four.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for that information about the crab apples, because my crabs look dreadful. So
now you know.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. You are so helpful. But then do I just leave it alone until next spring?
Yeah, it really is one of those diseases that it doesn't seem to be life-threatening. It'd be one of those things that I would, you know, if we do get into a drought period, you might think about watering it. Mm-hmm. You might think about fertilizing it either late in the fall or early next spring to sort of keep it going. But usually they pop right back out of it and go from there. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that if you wanted to use a fungicide to actually keep it from happening, you have to do it early in the season, you know, before it happens. And so it's too late to do any kind of fungicide treatments.
Okay.
So
then
yeah.
My second question is that I've had a problem. I got some the Charter Series hollyhocks this spring, and I planted them, and they have sun, and they just grow and don't do anything. I mean, they'll put out another leaf, and they sit there and put out another leaf, and they never grow like a hollyhock. Is it? I mean, I know they're biennials. Are they waiting for next year?
Oh, yeah. they are biennials, and so you'll just get this rosette of leaves, which is probably what you have now.
Yes.
Yeah. And then next year, so don't give up on them. So next year, that's when they send up the big, tall flower stalk, and then let them go to seed if you want to. And usually by the time you let them go to seed, you'll eventually get to the point where you have flowers every year.
Yes,
they kind of get off sequence, and you'll have them every year. But that first year is kind of, you know.
Okay. Well, then my friend gave me some of her old-fashioned hollyhock seeds just yesterday, and the same thing with poppy seeds. Can I strew them around in the fall, or, I mean, should I wait until spring for the hollyhocks?
I would do it now.
Now.
Either now or, you know, through September on the poppies as well. I would go ahead and get those out there and get them going. And a lot of times they will go ahead and sprout. So the hollyhocks, they might go ahead and sprout, and then you'll be on the sequence again where they'll actually flower for you next year.
Okay. And then the last question is, you said now is the time we can put out lettuce and spinach?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you can actually. It's great. The biggest thing is to keeping it moist. It may not be a big issue right now, but you know, keeping the seed moist is probably the big thing when it's hot like this. But no, they actually do quite well, you know, well into the season since they're frost tolerant.
Okay. Oh, I did have one more last question. I have my compost pile is doing much better than my garden.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I have a gigantic squash, and the tomatoes are coming up.
Oh, in the compost pile?
Yeah, in my
compost that's great.
Pile. And so I'm probably doing something wrong there, but they're so happy and huge. And how do you know when an acorn squash? I've never grown an acorn squash, and it's pale green. How do you know when they're done or, you know, ripe?
But it looks like an acorn squash? Okay. Okay. Because I will tell you, you know, because this is seed from last year, they cross-pollinate like crazy.
Oh.
So this seed, because it's been in the compost pile, we don't know what its parentage is.
Okay.
So who knows? But if it looks like an acorn squash, that's probably a pretty good sign. But usually what you'll notice is it'll start to get, especially on the side that sort of sits on the soil, that'll start to get kind of yellow.
Uh-huh.
And then that's when you really know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, but you don't know what the parent is, so who knows?
Okay. Well, I have a successful compost pile.
Hey, that's great. I've had great tomatoes coming out of my compost pile.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah, these volunteers coming up. It's great.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. We're getting close to the midpoint here. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. You want to tell us what you got growing on your compost pile? You know, got other kinds of issues. Just want to say hi. Hey, that's fine. Line number one in Urbana. Hello.
I didn't hear what line.
Yeah, that's you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a problem that sounds very much like the clematis wilt. It's on a ground cover that I have. I'm not sure the name of it. It has green leaves with white border. It grows 6 to 8 inches tall, flowers in the late spring, early summer. Does really well until about mid-July, and then suddenly it's all rusty. It also seems to attack the lily of the valley that's nearby.
Hmm.
What to do?
So it actually looks like there's a reddish rust on it?
Yeah, they just kind of turns brown, brownish red.
The stems themselves, or does it look like there's actually like a powdery like stuff on it? It's just kind of the color it looks.
The leaves and the stems, everything just dries up.
Okay. Because could it be vinca, maybe?
No, it's not
periwinkle.
Vinca. No, it's
green with a white border. I'm not. Unless it's goutweed, which is a little taller.
I don't know. The flowers are a white umbral sort of thing.
Oh, that kind of sounds like goutweed, which doesn't have a very pretty name, but
goutweed.
Goutweed. It might be another name that might be prettier, but I don't know what that one is right offhand.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it was here
pretty.
When we bought the house 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's very common, you know, as far as an older. That particular one, I'm not sure exactly, because I thought maybe it was vinca, which we often get some stem rot diseases on them.
No, I know that plant.
Yeah, okay. It's probably goutweed. I'm not sure exactly what disease it is. Mm-hmm. When you said rust, I thought maybe there actually is a fungal disease that's rust, as in you touch it and it actually you'll have these kind of orange spores on your hands. And then when you said rust, I thought maybe but that's not really what you're talking about.
No.
Okay. So it sounds like it's probably one of the fungal leaf spot diseases or stem blights, one of those that certainly would be common this time of year.
Uh-huh.
At this point, it's probably one of those things that you can't really do much about. Does it seem like it does it every single year?
Yes,
or?
It does.
Okay. It might be one of those things that you either have to, it's probably not life-threatening for the plant, but it might be one of those things where you just feel like if you want to do a fungicide treatment, you'd have to do it early in the season because you'd have to protect it against the fungus.
Uh-huh.
So unfortunately, this time of year, it's kind of late, but I don't know. Do you normally clean up the patch as in?
No.
Sometimes that helps because those fungal diseases will actually hang out on all those old leaves and stems and stuff. So sometimes actually removing all that stuff,
just
cut it off, but then get it out of there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that helps to some extent.
Okay.
But if there's, especially if it's in an area where there's not a lot of air penetration, as in it's kind of a still area and there's a lot of other plants around it, those areas tend to get some more fungal diseases than we might see on others.
Okay.
Is it particularly wet area?
No.
Okay, so that's not the issue, too. So it's probably, my guess is it's probably getting a stem rot somewhere along the line, and so it would have to be a preventative fungicide spray if you want to go that route, or just figure that this time of year you're just going to have to chop it back.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right, thank you. And now for those of you at home keeping score, gout weed is also known as bishop's weed and snow on the mountain.
Okay.
Do you like that
so
better
maybe
than
that's
gout
a better
weed?
Name.
Yeah, is that it's a yeah? It does look like it has a kind of an interesting sort of sharp-edged leaf that with white around the edges. Of course, also this site that I'm looking at says that it's an ecological threat because it's an aggressive invasive plant and it's not native.
Yeah, correct. And it does tend to spread like crazy. And people sometimes notice that it actually will start to turn green. And it'll get pure green within the stand, too, and then it kind of takes off. So it definitely is one of those plants, if I had it in my landscape, I'd be, you know, putting barricades around it.
Okay.
It's pretty aggressive. So maybe it's good that it's getting a fungal disease this time of year. So it keeps it down. That does sound better, I guess,
that's
than gout.
All right. let's talk next with someone in Mattoon, line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I think you've answered one of my questions. I just got in a little later. You said something about it's okay now to plant spinach and lettuce seeds. It's not too early for that.
No, you actually can do that. And actually, you can even do spinach even later on in the season. It's very frost tolerant. Actually, most of those leafy things are really pretty frost tolerant. And they'll last, you know, certainly through October.
My second question is, I've been away for over a week and came back to my yard, and it looks like it's pretty dry, and I wondered, is it too early or a little dangerous to put weed and feed on at this particular time? And should I raise the mower if I do put that stuff on?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd be putting on any weed and feed at this point. When it's really hot, the plant's pretty well shut down, and that's not the time you want to be fertilizing them. So it's really better if you do have some weed issues that you want to deal with, you'd be better off waiting into, especially if they're perennial type broadleafs, you know, dandelions, whatever.
That's what it is.
Yeah, you'd be better off actually waiting probably until September or even into October to do that.
September and October?
Yeah, it's just better off if we get into a cooler season and more moisture and those kind of things. You'll just have better success with it. And absolutely, people should be raising their mower height. When it's hot like this, it's a good idea to raise the mower height.
Yeah, we haven't had a rain here for quite a while.
Yeah, it's surprising. It seems so wet for a long time, but now it actually is starting to dry out again to the point where, when we get these really high temperatures and a lot of wind, those two things really dry plants out quickly.
One more question on the garden. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I got some material and mixed it with water to try to take care of this blossom rot.
On tomatoes.
And I did spray, and it seems to have helped quite a bit. I've only had one or two or three that had that problem lately. It also indicated that I ought to do it every 2 or 3 weeks, and I thought maybe one time would do it, and I was a little hesitant to spray the second time.
Right. Well, the problem with blossom end rot, and that's where that, as you know, that little rot ends on the very end of the tomato, and you actually can get on peppers as well. It's always worse when we have hot, humid days. And it's really a calcium deficiency, and it's because the plant isn't able to take up the enough calcium to take care of those fruits, which need a high amount of calcium. And so what you're trying to do is, you know, put the calcium and actually spray it on. But what they have found is that a lot of times the temperature finally gets better and we don't have the problem. It's very, very much affected by the environment and what weather we're having. Or what they also found is that generally you need to be spraying those on when the tomatoes are about grape size, much bigger than that, and it really doesn't help all that much.
Well,
so that's
probably late.
Yeah, so that's probably why they're telling you to spray, you know, every couple of weeks or so to get those new ones that are coming on. So usually what we do, I generally don't recommend sprays in so much that, you know, usually by the time people realize it's happening, it's too late to be doing a lot of spraying anyway. You can do other things. Just they also know that if there's a lot of fluctuation in watering, as in, you know, we get a heavy rain and then it dries out, we get a heavy rain, then it dries out, that really makes blossom end rot worse. So if you can keep a consistent moisture regime, either by watering it on a regular basis or making sure there's rain on a regular basis, whatever, mulching, all those things will really help with blossom end rot. I would think probably more so than trying to spray at just that right time.
Normally, I don't really have to water the garden very often this summer. Since I've been gone, I don't think there's been any rain. Is 5 o'clock too early to soak it down?
5 o'clock in the morning?
No, in the evening.
Oh, in the evening? You'd be better off if you can do it in the morning, because we really don't want, if you can water and not get the foliage wet, then that's fine. You know, if you can do like a soaker hose or something like that where you're not wetting the foliage, then that's fine. But we really don't want the leaves to be wet, because we're having enough problems with some leaf spot diseases on tomatoes
well,
the way it
I
is.
Can I just wet around the base of the tomato plant?
As long as you don't get the foliage wet, that's fine, sure. That's not an issue. It's just we just don't really want the foliage to be wet.
You're
going
thinking in terms of
evening.
Early morning watering. I've never done that.
Well, just trying to do it earlier in the morning is really probably your best bet. And that way it has hopefully all day to dry out before it gets into evening. So that's the idea. Obviously, that's ideal. But if you can water them and not get the foliage wet at night, that's fine, too.
Okay. Well,
so either
you.
Way. Sure.
All right, thank you. We are talking here this morning with Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, it's always on Tuesday. It's the second Tuesday of the month. She's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care and answer as many questions as we can. So if you got a problem, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Joliet, line 4. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I would like some information, if you would, concerning wildflowers in gardens, because our greatest enemy here is not fungus or too much water, because we're going through a Sahara Desert period here. It's even cracking the soil in our new lawns. We're way in the middle of the woods in a lovely house and have spent a fortune on flower runners that the deer are having a holiday with. they eat every. I mean, the deer are eating even the tops of our new catalpa trees. They're eating the trumpet flower vines. And by accident, we discovered that our most beautiful flowers are things like Queen Anne's lace and a variety of other flowers that people around here, I'm new here, call weeds. I don't know why a beautiful flower should be called a weed. But is there a book or information available where I may take these flower runners and turn them into wild flower runners? Is it possible to transplant things like milkweed and Queen Anne's lace and any variety of other wildflowers that the deer don't seem interested in eating, and to change my runners away from these very expensive bulbs and bushes? And just simply, other than that, I think I have two options: to go to war with the deer with a machine gun, or to cover over my flower runners with tar top here. Can you help me out?
Yeah, well, it sounds like you have a couple of different questions in there. There certainly are some great books out there on landscaping with native plants. Actually, the University of Illinois put one out, and I'm trying to think of the name of it exactly, but I think if you go to the Extension website and Google landscaping with native plants, I'm sure that book would probably pop up. I'm trying to think. I think there's Midwest in the name, and I'm sorry, I don't know exactly the name. Maybe David can pull it up here real quick.
See what I can
And so certainly there are some books out there. I will tell you that some plants that appear to be wildflowers are not native. So Queen Anne's lace is not native to North America. And also chicory is not native to North America. They look like they are because they're all over the place. So I will tell you that some of those plants that appear to be kind of, you know, out there on their own aren't necessarily native. So my suggestion would be to stick with some native plants, and there's certainly some books out there that would help you with that. And many of them can be either done by seed, you know, moved by seed, or certainly transplanted on some of those, but it depends on from plant to plant. So there's certainly some of those out there. I will tell you that there are some pretty good books out there, or at least some listings out there on some plants that are less resistant to deer, or are resistant to deer. less attractive to deer. And I think Cornell actually put out a fairly nice publication on it. So that might be another thing, to sort of look at some of those plants that are out there that might be less desirable for deer that might help you too. So I think there's a couple of things out there that might help you along those lines, is looking at some of those different plants.
Oh, I'm very interested to know that, because I think that many of us who are interested in gardening and think that we have to have these very expensive bulbs and bushes and so forth, when we have so many beautiful, I call them native because they're wild and in the woods, et cetera, that we might do better to have garden runners next to the house, because we've noticed that by accident, the Queen Anne's lace that got into our runners, and where it's highly fertilized, are gorgeous. One of them is almost 7 feet tall. People are saying, well, you want to pull them out. They're weeds. Well, I don't think they're weeds. What is a weed defined as anyway, if it's that beautiful? Can you tell me?
Well, it's usually considered a plant out of place. So it's
plant,
if you don't want it, yeah, if you don't want it there, then it's considered a weed. You know, a rose bush in a soybean field is a weed. It's not, it's out of place. It's not where it's supposed to be. So there isn't any botanical sort of definition of weed. But often people will call these things weeds simply because they tend to be pretty vigorous. And certainly Queen Anne's lace is one of those that will send out a lot of seed, and you'll end up with a lot of plants. So,
no.
But if that's something you want, then that's up to you.
In other words, a weed is very much in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. There really isn't any botanical definition so much for a weed.
Well, I think I may be the first person in the garden area to tout the fact that I have one of the most beautifully weed-ridden gardens because I'm digging this stuff out. I'm tired. The deer around here have selected our house as the ultimate salad bar.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And hours of that. The hostas are gone.
Yep.
It just about, I don't even know the names of the plants anymore because they're all eaten down.
Yeah.
But I will get online, as you suggested, at the University of Illinois, and it's called look up native plants.
Well, here, for example, I'm here on the U of I website. Here, I think this is the book Sandy was thinking about. There's a book. It's called Native Plants in the Home Landscape for the Upper Midwest.
Oh my goodness! Wait a minute.
Yeah, and why I didn't remember that.
And it.
Excuse me, sir. Native.
Yeah.
Plants.
Okay. Native plants.
Yes.
In the home landscape.
In the home
landscape.
Landscape.
For the upper Midwest.
For the upper Midwest.
Yes. It costs $25.
You can order it online.
And you can order it online from, if you just go, put into your web browser, University of Illinois Extension, and then I think I went to the section on horticulture, and there was something where you could click on something that says publications. And it's right there.
Okay, that's a real help. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate the program.
Well,
yeah,
sure.
Good luck. I understand your frustration. Good
and
luck.
There's a lot of, for home gardeners, there is a lot of good information on dealing with diseases and insect pests and plant selection, all that kind of stuff on the Extension website. And then in addition, there's a lot of printed material. There's guides for growing everything for flowers and for small fruits and for dealing with problems and selecting plants. And this particular one, again, if that's your interest, it says we have here stunning color photographs depict 80 plant species selected for the visual appeal, multiple seasons of interest, growing ease, commercial availability, and suitability to small sites. And then it also has some advice here on landscape design, how to plant stuff, when, where, all that. And so that would be a great book for people who are interested in those kind of plants.
So it's a great place to start, because it gives actually some recipe things that people aren't good at sort of combining plants. It really gives you some nice recipe things. So
okay.
And I think the caller makes a good point. We always think that something far away is better than what's in our own backyard. It's kind of the Wizard of Oz syndrome. But a lot of our native plants just have a tremendous amount of beauty to them.
Okay, let's continue here. We have next caller on line number one, and this is somebody in Champaign. Hello.
Urbana, that one? Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes, you're
hello.
Quite right. Urbana, yes, hello. Go ahead.
I just tuned in, so I may have missed the same question. I'm sorry if I'm asking another question.
Oh, that's fine.
We've got, fungus or mildew all over my vines, mostly pumpkin, that sort of thing. And last year they killed them. And I'm a little late. Probably I should have done something before now. Any suggestion for any saving them?
Yeah, I think probably the big thing is that if it seems like most of the vine is already gone.
And, well, there's some that are just starting. So
it may not be too late, but there are some fungicides you can use. Copper is one of those that you could use. And also, if you choose to not be organic, there's a fungicide called the chlorothalonil, which is another one. But if you go to the garden center and ask them about fungicides for it's probably powdery mildew is my guess.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, so it'd be one of those things. But if it's just starting, then you probably have a good chance of controlling it. If it's farther along down the line, like one of the callers actually had mentioned, that maybe it's worth pulling up that particular plant that really seems to be infected and so it doesn't continue on the other plants, because it certainly will do that. And then making sure that you clean up your garden, which you probably do anyway in the wintertime, get all that stuff out of there, because it certainly overwinters on all that debris.
Something about sulfur?
Yeah, actually, that is something that can be used as well. Let me look here real quick.
Do you sprinkle dry sulfur on it, or do you mix it?
No, it's actually a spray.
Spray.
Yeah, let me look here real quick. Maybe I said copper and I was wrong.
Okay.
No, I think you said sulfur.
Okay.
Thanks.
We're all losing our minds here. Don't mind us. Don't mind me.
That's okay. That's what we do for a living.
You'd think I'd been on vacation or something, but I really wasn't.
No. Okay.
Okay, powdery mildew. Actually, sulfur, you're right.
Okay. I thought that was
copper was for copper sulfur. Was for other problems, some other leaf spot problems you could actually use copper for, but it's really sulfur or the chlorothalonil.
Okay, and that's the kind of thing, if you go down to your garden center and tell them what it is you're looking for, they should be able to say, okay, yeah, here you go.
And I guess that brings up the other point, is knowing what the disease is, you know, getting a proper identification. And that's where the, you know, local extension offices can help, or the U of I plant clinic can help, but get a good, accurate identification. That's why it's kind of fumbling around here, because some of the fungicides are not good for certain disease issues.
Okay. Guest here this morning is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here on the program once a month. We talk about lawn and garden care. And we have maybe about 6 or 7 minutes left and some other callers, so we'll continue, and we will talk next, I believe, with someone in McLean County, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I was just trying to figure out, I have aphids, and I just got online, so I wouldn't quite, didn't get much information, so I'm repeating myself. What do I do that's least harmful to other insects with aphids?
So you have aphids on... Certain
my peppers, all my peppers. Last year they were horrible. This year they're just starting. I'm trying to see if I can keep them from getting really bad.
Yeah, actually, if you don't have too much of infestation, actually just a really heavy stream of water, aphids are actually not very good at hanging on. So just a really heavy stream of water, not to the point where you hurt the peppers, obviously, but a lot of times you can just really knock them off to the point where you can get low enough population so it's not an issue. Insecticidal soap is another one of those that would certainly work for aphids.
Like which ones? Is there any name or anything you can tell me?
For insecticidal soaps?
I
would just look for ones that are specially made for plants. So Safers is one brand. I think Ortho makes an insecticidal soap. There's lots of the companies make an insecticidal soap, but I'd get the plant kind. I wouldn't make up your own. And then, of course, read the directions. And actually all the fungicides, insecticides or whatever, we don't want to be using them when it's really hot out. So pretty much all of them will tell you don't use it when the temperature is above 85 degrees. So really pay attention.
So this week, if I sprayed it, do I spray it before it gets hot, or do I have to not spray the days when it's hot?
You're talking about using the insecticidal soap
if I do it early in the morning, is that okay, or that early morning doesn't matter regardless of if it's going to get over 85 during the day?
I think it's better off if you wait for some of those days where it's going to cool off, and it looks like it is. So I think for now, I would just use a heavy stream of water, get off what population you can, and then as the temperature drops, and it looks like it's going to the point where it's closer to 85, but again, read the directions and it'll tell you if there's a temperature restriction on it. But I'd wait until actually we're going to have a longer stretch of cooler temperatures.
How about for fungicide? Is there anything that's not so toxic?
Again, it depends on what you're trying to control.
I'm told it's some sort of, on my eggplant, some sort of fungus, but it's not the powdery fungus because there's nothing powdery on it. Because my husband took the leaves and they said it was fungus on it, and I think our tomatoes got them too.
Okay. Again, it'd be one of those things we want to get an accurate identification to find out for sure. So I don't know. Did you took this into a garden center, or you took this into a?
Yes.
Okay. So I personally, I think I'd find out what it is first to know what fungus it is, so you have an accurate identification, and then you can know what fungicide will work. Because as I mentioned before, not all the fungicides will work for all the problems.
Okay.
So there isn't like the standard.
And have you heard anything about Bayer's Advance working for Japanese beetles? Has it been successful or not?
Certainly, some people have had success using the Bayer Advance tree and shrub insect control for Japanese beetles. But generally, you have to apply it before you see the beetles. You know, if you're talking about the one they actually put in the soil, because the plant has to actually take it up in order for it to be effective. And that's not labeled, as far as I know, it's not labeled on edible plants.
It isn't, yeah.
That's only for ornamentals.
Yeah.
So,
any take on what's going to happen to the Japanese beetles? Are they going to go away, or have to quit growing roses?
Well, I would say they're never going to 100% go away. They're here to some extent. In a lot of areas, I know in my area, we saw fewer Japanese beetles this year. I think because of cold temperatures and the wet weather, you know, where it was really soggy soil, those kind of things. So in some areas, I think we'll see the populations go up and down. So,
thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. Let's talk with someone in Champaign next. This is line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Okay, I've got a cherry tree. That's what we said when we bought it. It's one of those flowering ones, and it has kind of like the limbs that bow over, so they got like this, you know.
Like a weeping cherry?
Yeah,
maybe?
It looks like that. It looks like it would be a weeping one, but we don't know what else to do with it because it's getting really full and kind of scraggly at the bottom especially, and we're not sure if we're supposed to go in and clean it out or how we maintain it other than trying to keep the bugs off of it because they seem to really like it.
Yeah, unfortunately, all the cherries. So you're wondering how to prune it?
You're right,
is that
how to
kind
prune
of what
it, how to make it and shape it in the right way.
Right.
I mean, because it doesn't look like it's going to do it on its own, so we're going to have to do something.
And you may have to. On some of the weepers, you do have to do some trimming.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly. So you think this is a weeper, but you're not quite sure?
Well, it you know what? It follows the pattern of some of the other ones I've seen, but it didn't specifically say that on the little tag that came with it. It just said flowering cherry tree.
Mm-hmm.
So it does flower, so that's a good thing. But it does have kind of those limbs just kind of, they follow that U-shape, you know, upside-down U-shape that goes down.
Yeah, so it sounds like it wants to be a weeper.
Right. So how do we encourage that? Because that's okay with us. But, you know, what's the best thing to do as far as encouraging kind of that?
So it sounds like some of them are heading upward and you don't want them to?
From the bottom. So I guess they're suckers maybe coming
up? Yeah, now those I would just remove completely.
Okay.
If they're coming up from the base, you probably are getting suckers, which wouldn't be uncommon on cherry. So I would just remove those completely.
Okay.
Just get those out of there because you're not, and they don't flower very well anyway.
Right.
And so generally it's just the overall shaping. And just removing those might help immensely.
Okay. And so then we've noticed that we've seen some trees, some of the, they look like very obvious cherry weeping trees. They seem to be fairly bare, say up to about 4 feet.
Right.
Ours isn't. It's got a bunch of stuff down there, too.
Well, you may want to go ahead and trim some of that off.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't do it. If it's a brand new tree, I wouldn't
go crazy on it.
No,
it's a couple of years old now. It's a couple of years old now. That's why we're thinking, okay, it's past the point where it needs too much, you know, you really ginger kind of.
It's still a young tree.
Yeah, it is still young.
So I think I'd remove the suckers
and
really start thinking about removing some of those lower branches. You might want to leave some of them on and just figure, okay, I'll take these off, and then next year I'll take a couple more off because you don't want to do a whole lot of heavy pruning.
Okay, and better in the spring or the fall?
I would probably do it now, early, because, you know, if you do it in the spring, you're going to lose your flowers.
Well, that's what we're afraid of. Okay.
Then
as far as any fertilizer in particular, or we just kind of leave it?
You certainly could fertilize in the fall or early spring.
Okay.
If you wanted to do that.
And then the stuff we've been spraying on it for the bugs, it's been the standard kind of, all-purpose stuff. We have to do it like every couple of weeks.
So this is probably for Japanese beetles, I assume? Or
well, that's what we think. We haven't seen very many around. But
they love cherry trees, so it's probably Japanese beetle.
We have seen some, but there haven't been. It's not been very common this year, for sure.
Okay. Okay, so I would just, you know, I guess I'm not sure I understand the question, but yeah, unfortunately, cherries.
Is that every 2 weeks? Is that about?
It depends on the problem,
okay,
and depends on the insecticide.
Oh, okay.
So it really varies, but you'd want to certainly read the label, and the label should tell you, you know, that kind of information, but really identify what the pest is to see if you really do need to be spraying, and you may find that you don't need to necessarily spray that often.
Yeah, because that's the only thing, because it's got to. Yeah. It leaves a very lacy pattern.
Sounds like Japanese beetles.
Yeah, that's what we figured.
Yeah,
that's how we kind of.
Yeah, but usually you'll see them. If you get out there, you'll see them in the morning, and they'll be all over it.
Okay.
So if you're not seeing them, that may be pest damage.
They'll be okay. Yeah, it looks healthy otherwise.
Yeah.
It's just a few of the lacy leaves all over the place. So.
Right.
Okay, well, good.
Okay.
Well, thanks so much.
Good luck.
Okay,
sure.
Well, thank you. I think, shouldn't we pretty much be done with Japanese beetles for this
year? We're getting that point. But I noticed today, you know, you get that onslaught, you know, where you think you're done because they do travel, you know, every 3 days or so, they'll move on to another host. And so unfortunately you get these kind of, and I noticed this morning I had a new crop that have found my rose bushes. So we do see that, but we certainly, as we get into August, certainly by the end of August, we're pretty well done with them. So,
okay. Well, you know, I think we're at the point where we're going to have to finish. I'm sorry, I have one last person here. I don't really think we have time to take, but they can call you, right, at your office.
Sure, at the U of I Extension. They can talk to Master Gardeners, talk to me.
And anybody, you know, wherever you live around the state, there's somebody like Sandy. So if you look in your phone book, and there can be listed different ways. Sometimes it's listed under your county. Sometimes it's listed under University of Illinois. But there should, if you go into your phone book, you should be able to find the nearest extension person to you. And this is what they do. So you can call them and ask the same kind of questions, and they'll do their best to help you out.
Mm-hmm. Or you can go on the website, and actually you have all the offices are listed on the U of I Extension website as well.
Very good. And also, maybe if folks are within the coverage range of our television station, WILL-TV, we have a program called Illinois Gardener. It's on Thursday nights at 7. Diane Nolan is the host. It is a live show. Sometimes Sandy's on that program, other people from the university and who work in various garden centers in our area, and they're there and they take questions, so that would be another opportunity. And we'll see you. I can't believe it's going to be September.
I know.
Right?
Hard to believe.
I see you.
Where'd summer
next
go?
Time. All right. Mm-hmm. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.